This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College. The events in Peru in these last hours require many, many voices to weigh in right now. We're hearing from a number of the leaders of South America and Central America, and especially from the leadership of what is called the Pacific Alliance Summit, which is now said to be called off because of Peru. What is the Pacific Alliance Summit? We've spoken of President López Obrador of Mexico, who leads it. But what is the significance? And especially, what does this mean for the region, Chile, Bolivia, which is in no way a state that is stable, given the protests of these last weeks and the contest after Morales? Professor, what is the Pacific Alliance Summit, and what is the significance of it being called off?
John, the Pacific Alliance Summit is yet another one of the ironies of the different turns and twists in South American politics. And so originally, several years ago, when a good portion of the Atlantic-facing nations of the region were left-oriented, statist-oriented, the group of states on the Pacific found themselves largely pro-market countries that were looking for pro-market constructive ways to deal with China, Japan, and others. And so at the time, you had the formation looking for a practical group of people to engage more effectively with Asia and exchange economic and financial flows and ideas. And so it was initially, again, a grouping of Mexico, which at the time was under a conservative leadership, as well as Colombia, as well as Peru, as well as Chile, with Ecuador as one of the observer states and in the option for perhaps Panama to come in. The irony is that all of those states of the Pacific Alliance are now led by leftists. You have AMLO in Mexico. You have Boric in Chile. You had Pedro Castillo in Peru, and of course you have Petro in Colombia. But also this year happened to be the year in which the leadership of the Pacific Alliance was in the hands of Mexico. And as we've talked about before, Mexico. Especially its foreign minister, Marcelo Ebrard, would like to reassert that Mexican leadership. You also have a AMLO who is sympathetic to the fate of Pedro Castillo. And so what had happened is during the waning days of this mess with Castillo, when he was basically under the gun by the Congress, and Congress basically said, you have so many corruption charges against them that we're going to insult you by not even legislatively proving that you can leave the country to go to the summit in Mexico. And so AMLO at the time said, okay, well, if your Congress won't let you go to Mexico, then we'll just postpone this and maybe we'll all come to Peru and have it there. So it was a way among those leaders of saying, okay, we acknowledge that you're being humiliated by your Congress. We, in the tradition of the clubby nature of the friendship among leaders, and that's always been the case in South America, we'll come and accommodate you. And Boric was going to do the same thing. But again, Castillo was of course ousted, before that summit could take place. And we'll see how that plays out. But as you also talked about, John, there are continue to be a range of different reactions.
Let's go to Santiago, Chile. Gabriel Boric is the newly elected. So many of these voices are newly elected. AMLO is an old man in the region. Gabriel Boric has been facing increasing questions about his leadership, his style, and his popularity has tumbled since his election. He is a young man. He learns quickly. However, his statement after the news from Lima, the government of Chile condemns the rupture of constitutional order in Peru and appreciates that the political crisis coming out of it is being addressed through institutional channels. Professor, I would say that's fence sitting, except it does not appear to be happy. Is Gabriel Boric now going to be concerned about his stability? Because you'll recall he comes to power after the protests, the violent protests throughout the country before the pandemic, and voices, young voices who are not committed to any particular person, but will challenge anyone who doesn't obey their progressive understanding of Chile, the redistribution, the vast rewriting of the Constitution that was rejected. So is Mr. Boric suddenly less confident than he was 2 days ago?
John Borch's reaction in this case, I think, is consistent with his complex position in general, that on the one hand, he is coming from a very politically weak position. But he is probably also, despite his inexperience, he has shown a certain commitment to democracy and at least wanting to do things in the right way. So I think in this particular case, you see the same thing, that on the one hand, he condemned what he called the rupture of the constitutional order, and yet he acknowledged that things had been put forward in the right way. And certainly in Borch's own case, with his plummeting popularity, with the failure to push through his constitutional agenda, Borch himself has been forced to move more towards the center and reshuffle his own cabinet and become a little bit pragmatic. I think Borch is learning, and he's proven himself to be able to constructively work with the United States. And at least to date, he has not become a overly destructive voice in the region. But it's interesting that many of the leftist centrists that you see right now, I would put Lula in that category, I would put Borch in that category, are looking at Boluarte and are thinking, this is not necessarily a bad thing for the Latin American left. Again, she is a committed social progressive leftist leader. So I think they're thinking that this may bring some more stability to Peru. This may be somebody that they can work with. And I think, frankly, that's one of the other reasons that some of the more, radical, anti-democratic leftist leaders in the region, such as Nicolas Maduro, such as Daniel Ortega and Rosario Murillo in Nicaragua, have been silent, because this is not necessarily either a particularly good or particularly bad thing for them with the position of the left in the region.
Well, let's go next door to Bolivia. What is useful about a coup, Professor, is that it allows you to review where everybody is in their understanding of government. Luis Arce is the president of Bolivia, and my memory is that his elevation was blessed by Evo Morales, who himself was ousted and then found refuge for a time both in Argentina and in Mexico, is my memory. But in any event, President Arce says, from the beginning, the Peruvian right tried to overthrow a government that was democratically elected by the people, by the working class seeking more inclusion and social justice. That does not sound confident, Professor. That sounds like somebody taking an opportunity to blame the right, which would be useful in his own country. Do I read that correctly? He's looking at his opposition.
John, this is indeed typical. Arce, who is a bit of a bland technocrat, but really trying to stay ahead of Evo Morales, really is echoing Evo's talking points here. That was remarkably consistent with what Evo said. And as you pointed out, John, apart from what actually happened, which was adhering to the constitutional succession in Peru and adhering to the process, and actually putting into power probably a more stable left of center leader, although the right has long been, really gunning for Castillo just because of his corruption and incompetence and concerns about Cerrón. You see that orientation, especially here in Bolivia, of seeing everything as a rightist plot, and seeing that the established class wants to deny the legitimate expression, and part of that is probably, frankly, gamesmanship, because it's understood that for the populist leftist base, the right and the established elites will never allow us to come to power. That is part of the appealing conspiratorial theory that you've seen for years among the Latin American left. And the fact that they're using it in Bolivia shows that it still has resonance among core supporters of the union movement and others in countries like Bolivia, but not just Bolivia.
And now the mystery. Brazil, not part of the Pacific Alliance summit, to my understanding, but certainly the largest, most dominant sovereign power in the new world after the United States. And I'll put it before the United States because the election just turned on Lula da Silva coming back to authority after many years of turmoil, including a jail sentence. Lula da Silva's response to the news from Lima: I followed with great concern the events that led to the constitutional removal of the president of Peru, Pedro Castillo. It is always regrettable that a democratically elected president has this fate. But I understand that everything was forwarded in the constitutional framework. When I first read that, I thought, my, this is soft, given the risk that he expresses and his supporters express through the election campaign. Was it just yesterday, Professor, that there was to be a military coup, that President Bolsonaro was never to permit Lula da Silva to win the election, all of the what you call correctly conspiracies? And now Lula da Silva sounds like a modest leader of South America who blesses the constitutional order. Does that serve him, given the risk to his future presidency?
John, Lula's reaction shows, on the one hand, that this is very personal for him, but at the same time, that he is smart and experienced, whatever his thinking behind the scenes. So, as you recall, Lula himself, due to his own very real corrupt behavior, was found guilty, was imprisoned, was inhabilitated from being able to be president. And it was never found that he didn't do what he did with the corruption, but he was released on a technicality which allowed him to run for the presidency again. And so when he looks at what happened with Castillo, I think he has a very real sympathy with basically being removed from power on corruption charges, or at least on something related to corruption. On the other hand, I think Lula, again, as a leftist, especially as a social justice oriented leftist, looks to Dina Boluarte, and he's smart. He says, you know, this is a done deal. Castillo's not coming into power. I'm going to have to work with this leader and this very important neighbor. Frankly, she's somebody I can work with because her ideology may not be that different from mine. And so I think Lula is being very intelligent here, saying, okay, the constitutional order was preserved, thinking about, frankly, the preservation of his own constitutional order, that despite some of the protests in Brazil, and despite some of the rumors, allowed him to be elected and not to be shut out by those complaints. And so I think Lula's played this very smart, knowing that he's going to be working with Boluarte after his own inauguration on January 1st in the very near future, and that she is part of that club of Latin American leftists that will be key to his own success. And frankly, the way in which he manages regional institutions like UNASUR or CELAC and others. And so he's thinking to the future.
The presidency of Peru has changed hands. There'll be much more to say of this in the coming weeks. The turmoil here is like a stone hitting water, still water, and the ripples are just beginning. Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We're headed to the other side of South America, to Guyana, to Suriname, French Guyana, to Dutch Guyana, and to French Guyana, because there's treasure. And the treasure is in dispute. This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.